BBC Radio Oxford. I've been having a great natter with my next guest. Food of Love, Cooking Up a Life Across Gender, Class and Race. That's the name of Oxford journalist Sylvia Vetter's new book. She's got many, but it combines stories of ethnic diversity and social mobility with some recipes thrown in. So it has a special twist. And there's so much Sylvia has done in her life, which I cannot comprehend into a sentence. So I've invited her into the studio.
Thank you. That's very kind of you. I'm really delighted to be here.
You've come in all glam, ready for the radio. I mean, I know only I get to see, but it's a real delight. And, you know, how many books have you written before? Because this is not your first.
No, but I think... For 20 years, I wrote for the Oxford Times, magazines, and for 10 of those, I wrote the stories of 120 inspirational people from five continents who had links with Oxford. And I created a mythical island of Oxtopia to send them there, you see. And I don't know what it is about castaways, but I mean, you know, obviously the BBC knows that.
They love those.
But people don't say no. So even even Chris Patton let me cast him away. So basically those stories, those life stories, were changed into three books. So Oxford Castaways, Oxford Castaways 2 and Oxford Castaways 3. But then, I mean, you know, the local press is in a difficult situation, and all freelancers, we were all kind of abandoned, sacked, if you see what I mean. So by that time, I was writing novels. I mean, the main one, the first one, Brush Breaks in Time, is actually a fictional memoir. And from that, I learnt a great deal, actually, about memoir writing, because it was inspired by a castaway called Chulalé, who a lot of people at the Ashmolean know. You know, he'd had some exhibitions there. Amazing, amazing artist. Very, very brave man. And but it was quite interesting interviewing him, because he lived in Wimbledon. I'd go up and I'd realise his life was like nine lives. So he did one at a time. Well, then I turned up one day and he was going over the previous times. And I thought, no, it's a 2 hours drive to get here.
Yeah.
And then I realised it wasn't the same. And so this is what I tell people when you do your memoir. Yeah. You know, when you start to write, it'll happen to you.
Yeah.
It's not just happened to Chulalé. It's like you take the cream off the top and that allows other things to come up. So suddenly you're remembering things you'd forgotten.
Oh.
You're remembering detail. So, yeah, try it.
It sounds like therapy, to be honest, doesn't it?
Well, it was in his case, I think, to be frank. I mean, but in the end, we made it a fictional memoir, but he allowed me to use the detail. That's why it's authentic, and that's why it's been endorsed by people like John Gittings, who was the Guardian's chief foreign correspondent. John said he read it trying to find fault with it and believing he would.
And then he was like, oh.
But he didn't, and he's endorsed it. And he said that Vetter is always accurate. So there we go.
There you go. That's something to be proud of. And I'm holding your copy of Food of Love in my hands. So tell me about it, because it's really interesting themes mixed with recipes. What was the reason to combine the two?
Well, I think I started with the recipes when I was thinking of just doing the memoir for my family, because I wanted to take recipes from all different people in the family, but just showing the diversity of our families. Because, yes, I mean, I married Atom when marriages like ours were, to be frank, regarded with a great deal of hostility and racism. And my brother married a lovely young lady of Chinese ancestry, you see. And just like most families now, you know, there's a lot of diversity in my family. One of my best friends was Italian and so forth. So I was showing them, or wanting to show them, just how the world changed through food. Just through the story of how we had this restricted diet in the 50s. And, you know, it was just English, and you wouldn't try anything different. But of course, the world's changed. We're now open to the world. You can taste the world. And that's and I'm sure young people just take that utterly for granted. Yeah. But of course, it wasn't always the case. Also, I don't eat meat, and I stopped eating meat in 88, when again, people regarded us as some kind of queer eccentrics, you know what I mean?
What was the
weirdos
reason? Yeah, I mean, sometimes I feel like that can still happen now. But what was the reason you stopped eating meat? Because I'm always interested.
Right, well, my husband has always been a vegetarian. Mm-hmm. Okay, so he's from India, so he was a Hindu and has never eaten meat. But we brought our boys up to eat meat, mm-hmm. because in those days they would have not had anything at school dinners.
Yeah.
However, when he was about 8, my eldest son suddenly made a link between the animals in the field and what was on his plate. And he decided not to eat meat, you see, like his father. Then when my youngest son was 13, I think he really wanted to become veggie, but he couldn't do it without being macho. It had to be a dare. So his middle brother did everything he could to try to make him eat meat, but he didn't. So by that time, I was eating less. And I think part of the reason, I just said to myself, do you know, can I kill an animal? If I can kill an animal, then I should eat meat. If I can't, I don't think I should ask anybody else to do it for me, in a way, you know,
I've
in a mental sort of way.
I've heard that saying, you know, if you can kill it, you can eat it. But, you know, I couldn't do that. I'm an animal lover.
Yeah.
Saying that, I still eat fish. I'm a pescatarian. Yeah, yeah, I mean, my idea of that is flawed. But you get a great deal of nutrients from fish and you don't have fish every single day. So other than that, I'm pretty much vegetarian.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And it's interesting. My reason was climate change, because I knew that, you know, the world is adapting and it's changing, sometimes not for the better.
Yeah.
But we are doing things to make the planet, you know, survive a little bit more.
Yes.
But I thought that was one thing I could take into my hands. That and shopping more at charity shops, which I love. But yeah, I was always interested to know what your reason was. And I can understand that, obviously, if your family were reducing their meat consumption, then you're like, well, what's the point of me buying meat then?
Yeah. Well, I did. So I started to cook for the vegetarians.
Yeah.
And then just cook like, a chop or a bit of chicken for the one meat-eating son. But I'm not a proselytising vegetarian. So when meat eaters do talk to me about it, I tend to say, look, you know, if you want to eat meat, that's fine, but why not just try to make sure you eat meat that's been reared without cruelty?
Mm-hmm.
And it'll cost you a little bit more money, but it'll be better for you because it's not stuffed with antibiotics. So, you know, so you'll probably eat a little bit less, but it'll be much better for you.
Right. That's interesting. And there's so many recipes that you've got in here, like an almond cake as well.
Oh,
That sounds like a bit of me, which we'll talk about. I also want to chat about your marriage as well, because, you know, you married Atom at a time where it wasn't widely accepted, was it?
No,
so
no, no.
We're going to go into that. I'm going to play a song right now and then we'll chat more with Sylvia Vetter. So in the studio with me is Sylvia Vetter, who writes a lot of memoirs for people, is what I've come to realise. But also we're talking about the new book that she's done called Food of Love, which combines stories of ethnic diversity, social mobility and recipes as well, passed through from families, which I really love. Sylvia, I want to talk to you about your marriage, because you married Indian-born academic Atom Vetter. And that was at a time when mixed relationships were viewed with, as you call them, hostility. So what was that like? Falling in love with with someone like Atom, what made you kind of fall in love?
Well, I think the truth is you don't really choose who you fall in love with.
Yeah.
So the chances of us meeting were so minuscule, because I did my A-levels at 17 and I then applied to do VSO. So went up to this interview. But of course, then they realised I was too young. But they'd started something called Community Service Volunteers, and they sent me to Smethwick, where immigrant children were coming who didn't speak English, you see.
Mm-hmm.
So they trained me how to teach English as a second language. And at the same time, Atom, he'd been born on the wrong side of the border in India. He would never have been able to afford, actually. His mother died when he was 2, his father when he was 14. He looked after himself, really,
mm-hmm.
until he was 14. And he did his first degree as a in a distance learning, mm-hmm. but got a first, you see. And so the Americans employed him in Ethiopia. And from there, he came here to do his PhD, you see. But he was starting to do it in Birmingham. Then he realised, because he had to pay fees and live, that he hadn't quite got enough. Mm-hmm. So he quickly took a job teaching maths in Smethwick. But the trouble was, it was the most racist election in British history.
Right.
Now, I've written the actual words in my memoir.
So it's all
but
in
I'm
memoir,
not
yeah.
going to say it, you know.
Yeah.
Because it's the N word, all the rest of it.
We won't talk about
anyway,
that.
Anyway, so obviously we decided Patrick Gordon Walker was the sitting Labour MP, and he was expected to be the Foreign Secretary mm-hmm. in the Labour government that was about to be elected. But he wasn't the right man to fight a racist campaign. So we joined the Labour Party and went round with him. And I suppose, but for the first time I met him actually was because a friend of ours said he wanted to start a multiracial youth club. And would I meet him? Well, by that time, you got the food story coming in here.
Oh.
Because, by the time the end of the week came, I hadn't got any money for food, actually. And some lovely Sikh guy said, well, you go to this gurdwara and they feed you for free. And they still do. Everywhere. The Sikhs are just wonderful. They're doing great stuff, feeding the homeless and families struggling. But every time in the gurdwara, food is free. And so that was my first taste of a vegetarian food, a spicy food and so. So anyway, I suggested that Atom and I meet at the gurdwara, you see. And he came along on a Vespa, on an Italian motorcycle, you know. And I mean, that was cool in the 60s.
I'd say that's still cool now. I don't know, like fashion and everything in life takes, like, history repeats itself, doesn't it, sometimes?
So I didn't stand a chance, really. but yes, so when we started, I suppose our relationship had to get serious quickly simply because of the hostility that we encountered. And Ashton said to me, you know, when we wanted to marry, he said, but look, if your parents don't approve, we shouldn't do it. It'll be too difficult.
Uh-huh.
But my parents had never left the country, but I'm so proud of them because, you know, if you read the memoir, you'll understand that just how special that was, and then them accepting Atom and loving him. And later on, my brother brought home a lovely young Chinese lady. My poor dad said, oh, we're so going to become like the United Nations.
Just a very diverse family, which you should be so proud of and celebrate that as well.
Well, I think I do. And I think this is what the last chapter I called The New Normal.
Yeah.
Because I bet everyone listening has got somebody in their family who's married to somebody maybe from a different country or a different religion or a different colour. You know, I mean, it's now normal, mm-hmm. which is why I don't understand the Little England kind of attitudes that want us all to be, I don't know, like we were in the 50s. I mean, I think our culture is so much richer for having had immigration. And that's why I put the recipes, because you see it. I don't have to tell you. You actually see. So, you know, you talk about the almond cake.
Yes. Well, this almond cake sounds really nice.
Well, it's ever so easy. Honestly, it's the simplest. It's not even any flour in it.
Oh.
It is the simplest, quickest cake. And it's from my Sicilian friend, Simonetta Agnello Hornby, who we met as young mothers in Kennington. She later became filled up the first family law firm in Brixton. But now she's a megastar in Italy. She's a best-selling author.
Wow.
And she's got the Star of Italy. She's got television programmes. And she does she's done books with recipes, but mm-hmm. also she's done television programmes cooking. And so she gave me this recipe too, because we've been very close friends. I don't know how we've managed it because, you know, lives have taken us very different
places. Adult life is so busy as well. Like, I have plans to see people in half a year. Like, that's just, like, the closest time you can meet up with friends again.
Yeah, yeah.
Wonderful. So all of these food recipes are in here, as well as some chapters, for example, chapter 10, teaching myself. You've got pictures of your wedding in here as well. You and Atom, you look so beautiful. And it was your wedding in Luton as well.
Well, that's the point. I suppose why I say it's gender, class and race is that I'm a working class ancestry, see. So the reason I'm really passionate about libraries and got Corky Paul to help us save our libraries here in Oxfordshire is that I wouldn't have had the life I had if I hadn't had access to Luton Central Library.
Yeah.
So that's because I've, you know, if I hadn't passed the 11 plus, I wouldn't have got higher education.
Uh-huh.
So, and I'm sure I got past 11 plus because I was passionate about reading.
Yeah.
And there was the world that took me, also it took me out of my world into other worlds, and so that's why, you know, I'm so keen on libraries. Is, and at the moment, in fact, I did a novel with Nancy Mendenio Hunt, who founded the Nacio Trust, and it's inspired by her life. But at the end I said, we better put some copies in the libraries in West Kenya. There are none. So basically, during the last year, some friends of mine in Kennington, we've been raising money to build the first one. And in fact, our target was 10,000, which at the launch of my book, we had a raffle for the library and we passed the 10,000.
Wow, congratulations.
So that will build the shell.
Yeah.
Now we've got to think, obviously, about what goes in it and the furnishing. So if anyone out there is really, you know, has got, you know, I don't know, computers they can give or expertise or, you know, or want to fundraise for the bits that we need fundraising for, I'd love to hear from them.
Yeah, well, they can get in touch and call us on 0808 100 9100 and we'll pass it on. Your wedding dress is beautiful. It's timeless and it's classic and it's just one of those dresses that it just fit you like a glove. This is what it looks like. And you've got a really beautiful veil. I'm in love with your wedding dress.
Oh, thank you. Well, it's very simple, isn't it? It's not a very fancy one.
But that's the thing, is that when things are trends, they'll go out of trend and they'll go out of style. But the ones that keep are the sustainable ones, and I really appreciate that.
Oh.
And you just look so lovely.
Oh,
with
thank
Atom.
You.
What a lovely day. So people can they buy your book now?
Oh, yes. You can buy it, obviously, from bookshops. You can buy it from Amazon or, you know, online. Also, next Wednesday, I'm going to be talking about memoir at the Friends of Kennington Library event. It's open to anyone. You don't have to live in Kennington. It's free to. So it starts at 11 o'clock in the morning and with coffee and cake, homemade cake, actually, by our lovely chairman, John Argyle, makes them, you know. But then I'll be... Although I'll say a little bit about my memoir, but not a lot, because what I'm going to try to do is encourage people to write their stories, you see. But then I'm also one of the founders of the Oxford Indie Book Fair, and we've got our third one on November the 26th in the Wesley Memorial Hall. So there'll be over 50 exhibitors, you know, but they're small publishers, local authors, some famous, some not famous, you know, illustrators like Corky Paul and so on, you know, and poets and all sorts. So we have got free speech. It's all free entry and the talks are free. So I'm going to be talking memoir, not on my own there. I'm going to be talking with Ray Falk, who's one of the organisers, and Ray was one of the founders of the Isle of Wight festivals.
Wow.
He actually stole Dylan from Woodstock. So I think, you know, I mean, and Dylan's coming, isn't he? You know. But so his memoir is very niche. So we'll be talking, so if anyone wants to come along to eat any of those, I'll be selling books at both, which I can sign there, obviously.
Yeah.
But otherwise, you can get it just, you know,
just
bookshops or Amazon or what have you.
Set your fingertips now. With food comes love and with love comes hope. Thank you so much, Sylvia. Thank you.